Majin Waha Wintra na Galiva, agus Falter Gaji Galway Talks, Lum Hain, John Morley, Ichchok the Nooser and Glor and Yov, no. Housing Commission calls for radical policy reset. The Merview bus route is disquiet over that locally. Children's Hospice Week takes place this week. Galway County Council to acquire Grove House site from the HSE. New event for Carrow, County Galway, community comeback. It's also a Clarenbridge Tea Party today to raise vital funds for charity. In trending topics, we speak to Joshua Byrne for the last time. Charlie Bird's documentary Ransom 79 is released in cinemas. And Jack L is to play live music for us here as he comes to Town Hall Theatre in Galway on the 31st of May. Good morning. You're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. If you want to get a comment into us, you can do on our text and WhatsApp line at 086-3833-553. You can phone Siobhan on reception on 091-770-077 and email comments at galwaybayfm.ie. Now, the Housing Commission has called for a radical strategic reset of housing policy and has estimated an underlying housing deficit in Ireland of up to 256,000 homes. The expert body was established as part of the programme for government to examine housing issues such as supply. In its report submitted to the Minister for Housing, Dara O'Brien, earlier this month, the Commission points to ineffective decision-making and reactive policy-making where risk aversion dominates. To discuss this further, I'm joined on the line by Justin Malloy, who's the Director of Western, Midland and Northern Region of the Construction Industry Federation. Justin, good morning. What do you make of this report?
Hiya, John. Yeah, I think we all know that we've insufficient houses out there. We all know we need a lot more houses than we currently have. And probably the biggest barriers there is, you know, it's the length of time to get through the planning process, the lack of zoned lands, the lack of services for zoned lands. The whole system probably needs to be streamlined. We need to be quicker at making decisions. It's very off-putting for investors and developers to kind of invest in lands if they know that, you know, the services aren't there, the planning, you know, could take years, you know, if there's objections and all the rest, and how long it takes to make decisions, get through the whole appeals process and everything else. And that is a costly process, and it's time delaying, and, you know, it's a difficulty for everybody. And you take the Outer Ring Road, again, it's gone on for over 20 years, over 30 million spent on it. And we still have no decision on it. No, we know we're on board Pinola now at the moment, but we need a decision on that because, you know, lands have been, developments haven't got planning permission because of the unknown status of the ring road. And if you think, if we did have that ring road, that would open up a lot more lands that could be serviced for new housing for people to live in for Galway City and County.
Okay, I know that the report's executive overview calls for emergency action to address the housing deficit. The government will say we're building more houses than we ever have in the past decade, but is this enough? Are we still too slow despite the government's best efforts?
Yeah, I think we need to be, you know, it is a problem when we need to deal with it. We need to deal with it more quickly. And I think we have to review, as I say, look at all. I know everybody's flat out trying to get things across the line and everything. But, you know, we still have a planning system that's very, very slow. That particularly if a planning application, you know, is granted and then is appealed to Mbora Pinola. And if it then goes on for judicial review, it takes, you know, an inordinate amount of time. It can take years. And that can be the difference between a project going ahead and just making it totally and utterly financially unviable and never going ahead. Yeah. And, you know, in a housing crisis, I don't think we can have that. We think we have to be a lot quicker to react. And we need to put we have to fund our service providers. And we have to give them the resources, you know, so that they can deliver the services we need for more land. So for water, wastewater infrastructure, electricity, whatever it might happen to be, whatever, you know, roads, service, everything. We need all of those particular services and we just don't have them. And all those bodies themselves have to go through a planning process. So even if they decided to put in a new water treatment plant in an area, they're still going to have to take a planning process. It can still be objected to. Mm-hmm. So it goes on and on and on. And everything's just very, very slow. Yeah. To move.
Now, I know this commission estimates that the underlying housing deficit ranges between 212,500 and 256,000 homes. That's based on the 2022 census figures. And we do know more people have come into the country since then. So we really are lagging behind. But it takes a mid-range of 235,000 homes, which are required as an emergency level between 2025 and 2034. So that's a huge task for government.
It is a big task. There's no doubt it is a big challenge. But as I've often said in the past, you know, the construction industry itself is never, we've always responded. You know, there's always a talk about, is there enough resources? But the industry has always responded to demand. Delay has always been not in the actual construction process. Once you get to the construction stage, the houses go up fairly quickly. It's the leading up to that. It's trying to get source the land, get the services in, get the planning permission. That can take years. But the actual construction process is, you know, is the quickest element of it. And why there are challenges out there, if we, you know, we need, as I say, we need more land, we need more service zoned and service land available to the market there to create choice for people. We need, you know, does the whole east side of the city needs more water and wastewater infrastructure? We need to be putting that in as a matter of urgency. We just need to be quicker to react. Now, how you do that, I mean, I know there's a review, the Planning and Development Act on now as we speak, but by the time that comes out, it's still not going to be the silver bullet. It's going to take time to implement and to be adjudicated, gone, I'm sure it'll be challenging, et cetera, but we do need, you know, to make projects financially viable, to make them attractive, there needs to be quicker decision-making processes, and we need, as I said, we need more services.
And the way people live, Justin, is a big part of this as well. Bigger households or smaller households or maybe small families in big homes could be an issue, because I know this commission also estimates the required delivery level. If the average household size reduces to 1.9 persons and the population increases to 7.25 million by 2050, in that scenario, an average of 81,400 homes per annum would be required. However, though, if the household size is 2.4 persons and the population increases to 6.25 million, the average will be 33,400 homes per annum. So depending on how our demographics change in Ireland and how people choose to live, that could affect the types of delivery of home we need drastically.
Yeah, well, I suppose if you look at a lot of new developments now, they're kind of a mixture of house types. To allow the whole concept is to allow people to, you know, to stay within the area. So when they're younger, they might start off in an apartment, then they have, you know, a family, they might transition into a 3 or 4 bedroom house, and then as they get older again and the kids move on, they might transition back down again. So it's talking about a mixture of house types, and I suppose, you know, the planners are cognizant of that all the time. But we have to give people a choice. So if you have people, you know, older people whose children have moved on and are in a big house, they need something to transition down to that's suitable for their age and their stage in life. So it's all about, again, it's all about choice and creating choice for people so they have those opportunities out there.
Mm. And to make these options affordable to people as well, because I know the Commission is also calling for a targeted increase in the proportion of social and cost rental housing to 20% of the national stock. Is that something you think is needed?
Yeah, we need all sorts of house types, and you know, we need the social, we need the affordable homes, but we also need the private homes as well. We need more private homes for people who don't qualify for either social or affordable housing. They need an option as well in where that they can access private homes to buy. So there has to be, you know, a mixture of house types throughout, so it doesn't become an imbalance, so that no sector of the community is excluded from housing. So there has to be balance in all of that. And in the private side of it, when you're talking about the private housing, it has to be financially viable. And that's probably, you know, that is a difficulty for a lot of developers, you know, where they look at lands, where there's, you know, either the services aren't there, or there's difficulties with planning, or that planning could take, you know, go through a long process of appeals. You know, that doesn't make it financially viable. To hold on to that, you know, purchase that land, you know, and pay the finance costs in that for years, and then try and develop it, to heal it on. So we need, you know, it has to be viable for everybody. So it has to be attractive for everybody to be able to go out there and develop these lands. So as I say, that we do have a balance in of the mixture of house types throughout the country. So there's something there for everybody.
Among the recommendations in this is to establish a housing delivery oversight executive to drive coordination across legislation, regulation and administrative practices. Is that something that you'd welcome?
Yeah, I do. I think that would be a good idea. I think we do need, a driver behind the whole lot to ensure that, that while everybody is doing their best, but is it how well coordinated is it? Are we working in silos? And maybe, a body like that would help maybe cut some of the overdrive and things and the inefficiencies in the process, and maybe identify where the bottlenecks are and how to cut them out and get things up and running and moving quicker. That would definitely be a benefit.
Mm. There's also a great saying that if you throw money at a problem and it fixes it, it isn't a problem, because I know this report also finds that Ireland has, by comparison with their European partners, one of the highest levels of public expenditure for housing, yet one of the poorest outcomes. That's a staggering statistic.
It is a staggering statistic. Now, there is a lot of the housing that is being developed, is social and affordable housing. The government has poured a lot of money into that, and there's a lot more of it coming onto the market, and that's good. But if you look at, say, the private housing schemes, they're in the cities to an extent, but once you go outside the urban centres, there's very little private housing going on. And the developer who would have traditionally built maybe 20 or 30 houses in a small town in the county, those guys are kind of gone out of the market now. So it's who fills that gap, who provides those housings that individual used to provide once upon a time. So we have to look at how do we address that as well. Mm. How can we make private housing attractive to build outside the large urban centres? So that, again, that we have a sufficient mixture of house types for everybody. So there's the housing available for everybody in all locations. Mm. And that will help to, the more housing that's out there, it'll help to stabilize costs and rental and everything else. And that's what we want. We don't, what we have is a scarcity here. We need to address that scarcity in supply.
Mm. And in fairness to the government, they often say that this needs to be tackled by both the public and the private sector. This commission report actually backs that up, and it says that funding in the order of somewhere between 16 to 20 billion euro per annum is required to deliver the required level of housing coming from both the public and private sector. So it's a big task for both government and the private sector to step up to this.
It is. It is a big challenge for everybody involved. But the industry, the construction industry, has always, as I said to you in the past, they've always responded, and they will continue to respond. It's as I say, the biggest difficulty is to get it to the construction stages. All the delays are pre-construction stage. The actual construction stage is fairly straightforward, and it goes in a fairly streamlined process. So it's how do we get it to that stage? How do we encourage investors to come into the market to invest in housing, particularly outside the urban centres, so we have that mix of social, affordable and private housing for everybody? So it is a challenge, and I think we have to probably maybe review how we do things. But that overarching body, I think, is a good idea that can look at all the various different stakeholders, what everybody is doing, and look, identify the bottlenecks and how can these things be quickly ironed out and move on and get the thing up and running.
Mm. Now, separately to this, I know the Commission has also prepared a report on the proposed wording for a referendum on housing, which was submitted to the Minister last year. Is a referendum on housing something that yourselves and the CIF, Construction Industry Federation, would welcome?
Well, I'd be perfectly honest with you, John. I don't know enough detail about what was said in that in relation to the referendum. But irrespective of anything else, I suppose we still need quick decision making, at the heel of the hunt, no matter what's written down. If we can't get the service, if we don't put the investment into the infrastructure out there, if we don't streamline our planning process to make decisions in a timely and cost-effective manner, it doesn't really make any difference what we say. We have to get the things right on the ground. We have to, have processes that work and are efficient and are timely and cost-effective.
Mm-hmm. All right, Justin Molloy, the Director of Western, Midland and Northern Region of the CIF, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks.
Thanks very much, John.
What are your thoughts on that? Get them into us on 086-3833-553. Coming up next, we look at an issue with the Merview bus route, with the chairperson of the Merview bus route committee and some other locals as well. And we also have a lovely story coming your way before the 10 o'clock bell rings, because we have Kerry McLafferty, the CEO of Laura Lynn, and Marie Lynch, the Community Assistant Director of Nursing in Ballinasloe, to talk about Children's Hospice Week. So all that and a lot more coming up between now and 10. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Drive happy in Windsor Motor Mall, Galway, with hundreds of used cars to suit your budget.
Good morning, you listen to Galway Talks with John Morley, and we're looking at the Merview bus route because locals have raised several issues with it since it's changed in recent times. I'm joined in studio by Ciara Hickey, who's the chairperson of Merview Bus Route Committee, and by Maureen Ferguson. You're both very welcome onto the programme. Ciara, I'll start with you first. Outline your concerns about what's developed over the past number of years.
So just to give you a brief outline there, John, on it is April 23, there was a draft plan from the NTA to remove the route coming into Merview, which would be the bus stops at Clark Avenue and Parnell, which is the 401 service. At the time, residents kind of kicked up about it, and it's a route that's there for over nearly 70 years. So petitions were signed and objections, over 500 petitions signed and objections sent in to Galway City Council and the NTA. And in December, when the NTA's final report came out, we got the good news that the bus stop would remain. But with that, there was a slight change. It wasn't with the 401 service. They were now rerouting the 405 service. But for that to happen and come back out and continue with the route onto Michael Collins Road, it then had to go either side of Parnell Avenue, down onto the narrow avenues of McDermott, Barry and Tone Avenue. Like, Merview was built nearly, as I said, 70 years ago, and there was no cars. There wasn't the population, the infrastructure there for it. We've seen development of clubs, factories. We've the new Crown Plaza coming on board in the next year or two, I suppose. Like, the place is a rat run. Speed is an issue daily for years. I'm a mother of young kids, and like, I'm afraid to let them out. There's also older people now with mobility aids. You have people with disabilities. Like, it's frightening sometimes, the speed that people are travelling to get up and down to the shops. It's great to see people using the local shops, but at the same time, the speed around the place is frightening. So it is. So they'd be some of our issues. You're also talking about a bus going up and down these narrow avenues, three buses an hour from 6 a.m. to 12 a.m. at night, which is 18 hours of the day. Most of the houses as well along these avenues are on street parking because they don't have the capacity to put drive. Well, they have the capacity, but they're losing their front gardens if they are to put them in. Like, it's the routes that are there, there's nothing wrong with them. So all we're asking is that the route stay there. Also, the 401 is a very beneficial route, not only to the people of Merview travelling to the likes of Well Park Retail Park and Briar Hill for their shopping. It's given independence still to people, the older generation that are there since day one in the area. But it's also given them, the people, the younger that are working, access to get to work. Merview is the nearest post office for people in Parkmore, Ballybrish, Ballyban, that use that route to come down. You're talking about them going back out onto the Munavere Road, trying to get across a busy junction. Like, it's a health and safety at the end of the day. And like, as I said, for the sake of, it takes less than 2 minutes sometimes to come in and circle around Merview. We just ask that the route remain in place as it is.
When does this come into effect, or has it already come into effect?
It isn't in effect yet, but they're saying 2025, early 2025. But we just took the opportunity. An awful lot didn't understand the route. As I said, this was published in December, and it was more nearly the end of February, March, when we kind of got out to the residents and started saying, can you read these maps? Do you understand these maps? And an awful lot didn't. Mm-hmm. So that was our thing, was our education, was to get it out to the residents, get their understanding, and not just asking them to jump on board with us with something they didn't understand.
Mm.
As I said, there's an awful lot of an older generation there, an older generation that couldn't send in submissions by email and stuff. So we've done things, we've helped them in a way, haven't we?
Yeah.
By like doing a standard letter and we submit it. Like, you're talking in Old Merview, there's 315 houses. We've got over 1,400 petitions signed on this since March.
Mm.
We've, like, each avenue has done a letter of support and they're outlining issues, how this is going to affect their avenue.
Mm.
And also the changes that it'll affect on people independently. Like, the 401 is an excellent service. It's always been there. It goes right out to Salt Hill for the people. An awful lot of people in the area have even said to us when we've been knocking at the doors to them the last few weeks, well, my GP is out in Salt Hill, or my GP is in the Crescent, and I hop on the bus to go on my own. And these are people in their 80s and 90s still getting out independently day to day. And like, you don't want to take that away from them.
So just to summarise, the biggest issues with this, no longer going through the shopping centre or stopping off there?
Well, it will, but they're rerouting the 405 to do that.
Okay.
So the 401 won't. So it means anyone coming from Ballybrish that use the 405 service, that they will no longer be able to get in around the shops. They're talking about maybe 100 metres, 200 metres out and a walk in. And it's okay for the coming down. Well, it's not. They're still dropped a good bit away, but it's coming back, a health and safety of crossing that road.
Okay.
Like, some of them have walking aids coming, and, you know, different mobility aids. So you don't want to take that from them, whereas they're coming right in for the sake, as I said, 2 minutes in around by the shops, and that's all the drop-off is.
And the other big issue then, not going to Salt Hill, going to Knocknacarra instead on this 405 route.
So the 405, so there is two current routes. So the 401 comes in and comes up the Munavir Road, in and around McDonough and Clark Avenue, and back out onto the Munavir Road. That goes out to Parkmore. And then the 405 that's currently there comes the Tuam Road, and across by the Tuam Road, primary care there in the new Crown Plaza, that runs then adjacent to Thermo King and Royal Tara at the moment. And it goes up and into Boston Scientific.
Mm.
Like, they're two excellent routes to, for connection for people even working across the city. The other thing, and us looking up different things and researching this, those two routes alone cover 26 schools. Within, I think we said the most was a 7 minute walk from a bus stop to a school. That's primary, secondary and third level. Like, it's an awful lot of coverage, and it's something that's ideal there. Not everywhere has it, that there's kids coming across and going across the city to schools and that. So why take that away from them?
Maureen, how would it affect you personally?
Well, it's, for example, on both sides of our house, we have elderly residents, and they don't drive. So literally, they're petrified at the thoughts that, you know, our next door neighbour, she goes down to, say, the likes of Well Park twice a week to do her shopping, and vice versa on the other side. They can go all the way up to Dunn's, etc. Like, you know, just to get their few little bits and pieces to get out for themselves for the morning. That's all going to be gone, because they're not going to be going out and onto the main road, for example. And our house is actually just on the cuff where the buses are going to be coming up and around. There's no wait, there's no room. Like, you have people coming in filling the oil tanks. Once an oil tanker is there, good luck getting even a car down past it, because that is literally the route will be coming down by Parnell Avenue and back out and down that way. And there's no room for parking there at the best of days, and there's no way they're going to get a bus down.
Mm. Kier, just back to you. Have the NTA actually explained why they're making these changes to you, or do you have any idea why this is happening?
They haven't. As I said, John, like, it's, so people objected at April last year at the bus stop going from Merview, and like they came back then with, okay, we'll move the other route. So when we have sent in objections to them, they're coming back to us with, we've already received 900 objections letters that we're not taking anything else on board. them 900 objection letters that they have got or submissions, they're from across Galway City. They're not just from the Merview area. When you read the report that came out in December, there's a total of 79 people they have said have been asked and feedback on this or surveyed in Merview. And there's another 19 in Ballyban area. That's a total of 98 people out of 900. But the thing is, are these people, we are wondering, is are these people that are just using the bus, these could be coming off the bus from Loughrea, from a train into Galway City and just using that to get to work in Parkmore, or are these 79 in Merview and the 19 in Ballyban, are these actual residents of these areas, or are they just bus users that don't know how
the effects that's going to have it
on, like, the impact?
They never actually came out to the residents and said, this is what our plan is, can we get your opinion on it? There was no discussion with any of the Merview residents.
Consultation. Yeah.
As Ciara said, like, those 79 people, they could have been from anywhere in Galway, just on the bus route when they asked the question.
We'll leave it open to the NTA if they do want to respond. We'll actually put a call into them this morning as well. But just to maybe give their side of things, they have to respond to supply and demand and where the demand is and best manage the routes around Galway City to the best of their ability in terms of frequency and the routes they take. So perhaps there are valid reasons for this.
Yeah. Now, looking at it in the report in April, the reason they were given for the 401 not coming in and circulating around Merview was a delay getting to Parkmore.
Mm-hmm.
As we said, we've timed it ourselves, looking at quiet times of the day, at busy times of the day. We've seen multiple people get off in one go and multiple get back on the same bus. Mm. And it's taken
less than two minutes.
Mm. It was 1 minute 40 something seconds one day. So,
and that's just getting on and off the bus. But what about actually moving
along? No, that was literally, followed the bus behind it.
Yeah.
And it literally, from the time it went up, dropped off, collected and back out onto the main road, it was less than 2 minutes.
Like, we know there's delays constantly for routes on Well Park and College Road daily at the Monivea Park Junction there at Ballybrish, at Briar Hill. That's where the delays are. The less than 2 minutes coming into Merview isn't the delay.
It's a big problem on that side of the city, though, because there is a lack of bus corridors to allow the bus to actually get past and beat the traffic. And when that does happen under NTA rules, the bus has to basically go to its final destination a lot of the time to make up the time. So you could end up getting skipped over the likes of a Merview on the way in as well. So
now, there is benefits, John, to the new routes coming in, because, like, the 409 route, which is the Parkmore that runs along the Dublin Road, at the moment that only operates from Ayr Square to Parkmore. They're now extending those routes out that'll be coming from Knocknacarra through Salt Hill, through Shontala areas. So that connect is coming. That 409, which is changing names, they're changing the names of the routes too. So the Route 9, will be that new route. That's changing to a 24-hour service. Mm. So that's going to be so beneficial. Whereas at the moment, I'd say there's a lot of people haven't come to Ayr Square and then change to get on the 401 to get to Parkmore. With that connect from the other side of the city, is going to be beneficial in a way that there won't be probably as many depending on the 401 service in the future. But look, it's going to be trial and error too when that comes. But look, there is good benefits in some of the changes across the city, but we just think, for the sake of 2 minutes.
Yeah. So just to summarise, if you had the NTA in front of you this morning, what are you calling on them to do? Is it to leave well enough alone?
Leave well enough alone. Leave the two routes there that are there and hope. And look, we've asked them, the city councillors, we've been in touch with city councillors, with running candidates in the upcoming election, TDs, to ask, and they have all asked the NTA to come and walk the route with us. And that's all we're doing, just to see the day-to-day difficulties within the area and
to see what their actual plan is going to, what it's physically going to look like. That, like, from what we know, nobody's actually walked the route that the new bus route's going to take. Nobody from the NTA. like I said, we've reached out to them. The councillors have reached out to them.
Yeah, the councillors.
They were supposed to be at a meeting last week that we attended.
Yeah.
And still nothing from them.
Well, we're going to reach out to them as well this morning. Ciara Hickey, the chairperson of the Merview Bus Route Committee, and Maureen Ferguson, thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks this morning. Just some of the comments coming in this morning on this one. Up to now, local councillors need to stand up and sort this issue. Election on the way, so let's see their worth. Another caller says, if you want to speed traffic and parking everywhere and anywhere, you should see the Merview School area during the mornings. It's very dangerous. Another caller says, hi, John, just one quick question. What is the point in having so many councillors in Galway City and County when the decision-making is higher up? They can't make the final decision. They can talk about what is needed, i.e. housing, ring roads and buses, etc. These topics were issues 5 years ago and we are still talking about them, and they keep coming in to 086 38 33 553. You could also phone Siobhan reception on 091 77 0077, and email comments at goibayfm.ie. We're coming back and we're looking at the Children's Hospice Week with Laura Lynn and a local branch of Ballinasloe next. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.
You're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. Get your comments into us. Just another comment from the last conversation we have. Hi, I live on the Tuam Road and get the 405 into town. We would need a pickup at shops in Riverside, as we are older people and we are a distance away and have to cross the main road in Riverside. Thank you. And now we're moving on to Children's Hospice Week, which is running all this week. I'm joined on the line by Kerry McLaverty, the CEO of Laura Lynn, and Marie Lynch, who is the Community Assistant Director of Nursing. You're both very welcome onto the programme today. And Kerry, I'll start with you first. Good morning. Children's Hospice Week, it's vital work you do.
Good morning. Yes, this is, I suppose, the one week in the year that we really get to raise awareness and for the work that we do at Laura Lynn, which is Ireland's only children's hospice. So it's a massive week for us to kind of share the news and about what we do and the services that we provide to support families across Ireland.
Yeah, talk us through them. They are vast and wide ranging and 24-hour.
That's right. And so I suppose the key elements that we provide is support to not just a child with a life-limiting condition, but also the entire family. We provide supports on that 24/7 basis, everything from short respite breaks for the whole family here in our hospice in Dublin, as well as supports to siblings. We have play therapy, we have counselling, occupational therapy. We provide support then in the home. We have end-of-life care, obviously a core part of what we do, as well as a range of bereavement supports then after a child has died.
We're also joined on the line by Marie Lynch, who is the Community Assistant Director of Nursing. Marie, good morning. And Ballinasloe is one of your bases here in Galway. You do great work out of it.
Morning. Yes, it is indeed. So our team in Ballinasloe are just in place since earlier this year. So we're really happy and excited to be able to extend our community of care up into the west and the northwest, I suppose. So the team are based in Ballinasloe and we're currently, caring for families in the Galway, Mayo, Roscommon area initially. And then we'll be looking to extend that to cover the west, the northwest, and to move a little bit more east into Leinster. So providing care to the families in that region, and like Kerry said, supporting not just the child but the family and siblings in that area as well.
Mm. It's great you have this support over here in the west, because I know with a lot of children's conditions, a lot of that is centralised in Dublin in the Children's Hospital, Temple Street and other places.
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose, Laura Lynn have a real focus on this, for our next strategy of having equal access to care and trying to provide care as close as we can to the families' homes while then still being able to access the hospice in Dublin, so if they choose to do so. So we're really fortunate we have family support. We have a music therapist as well as our nursing team in our community team in Ballinasloe. It's a really positive, expansion of the service. And we work really collaboratively as well with all of the services that already work in that region. Mm. So, we work really collaboratively with the acute services and the other community services that are based in the region, which is really an important part of what we do.
Mm. It's an important point, Kerry, the fact that it's a difficult time for families, and what you want to do is keep the family together in that time.
That's exactly it. And in the run-up to Children's Hospice Week this year, we surveyed some of our families to try to understand, I suppose, the impact of having a child with a life-limiting condition. And a lot of the feedback that we got really highlighted, firstly, that 24-hour round-the-clock requirement and that burden of care that really is from, you know, all the way supporting the child right through the night, and a lot of families having to provide care 7 days a week, 24 hours, which that is a massive drain on a family's resources, I suppose, physically and emotionally. But equally, you know, some of the feedback that we also got was around the impact on relationships. So, for example, both between parents themselves, and that having that constant requirement for care, and that can really impact on their own relationships with other family members, relationships in the community with their friends and society. So it really does have a massive impact on the entire family, and then equally on the siblings, who sometimes can then be, I suppose, can feel that, you know, parents feel that they worry, I suppose, that they're not spending enough time with the siblings of the seriously ill child, and that can have a massive impact, and siblings sometimes take on that role of carer. So really, from Laura Lynn's perspective, we're trying to make sure that we're providing care to the child with a life-limiting condition, but also providing essential supports that allow families just time to be together as a family and take that burden of care away from them by supporting that, and really that wrap around holistic support for the entire family.
And there's one key word, Kerry, and that's respite.
Yes, absolutely. It's a core part of what we do, and giving families, I suppose, that break. Families can choose to avail of respite here in our hospice in Dublin, which I suppose a lot of families, they'll treat Laura Lynn almost like their holiday, and so they'll come up for a few days like that. Again, we focus their time here on allowing mum and dad that little bit of a break and a breather and a rest, even to catch up on vital sleep, and then we also provide care in the home, which is more targeted in terms of, it might be for symptom management support or for a key period of intensive support in the home, but it can also have a respite element to it as well, and allow mum and dad just time to, you know, do the shopping, or, you know, go and get their hair done, or something small that is, you know, so insignificant in some ways, but is a massive piece for them in just, you know, retaining a sense of normality to their lives as well. And respite really gives that that break to families to do that.
Yeah. Back to you, Marie. You mentioned that the facility in Ballinasloe is relatively new. Have you had a big demand for your services since you set up?
Yeah, so Laura Lynn has always been a national service. So we did have a cohort of families in the region, you know, prior to the Ballinasloe team commencing there. But since starting in the region since earlier this year, we've already had an increase of about 25% in our referrals so far from the region. And I suppose we saw that when we started with our other community service in Cork 2 years ago, that we had that huge increase in referrals in the first year. So we're, I suppose, seeing something similar happen in the region. And I suppose, you know, the community team, the community service, as Kerry has said, it really is based on those targeted supports. And in, say, the last year of 2023, we've been able to provide 2,143 community visits throughout the country. So we're really hoping that by having the team in Ballinasloe and being able to look after teams in that, like in the west and northwest, that we'll be able to, you know, get more community visits out to those families as well, when they're needed and for those targeted reasons.
Okay. Back to you, Kerry. I suppose awareness is a big thing as well, because a lot of families that might be going through this difficult time, just to know where they can get the help from and where they can get the resources. If a family, I suppose what the question is, what sort of families are you aiming this at?
So from our perspective, we take referrals from a vast range of sources. So typically a lot of our referrals will come in from either the acute sector, so the consultants working in the acute hospitals, but also from community nurses. We take referrals from social workers, from families themselves can actually self-refer. Our main criteria is that the child is between the ages of 0 and 18, and that they have been diagnosed with a life-limiting condition and aren't expected to live beyond 18 years of age. and that a consultant, I suppose, has signed off on that diagnosis. And then the referral comes into our central team here. It's a multidisciplinary assessment. And then we complete what's called a holistic needs assessment. So a team will go out to meet the child and their family and to try to understand, I suppose, what their core requirements are and how Laura Lynn can best support them, knowing that every family's needs are very different. So our team will assess what is the best way that Laura Lynn can provide support. And it may vary year to year. So in the first year, it may be that respite is a core requirement. But for other families, it might just be that, you know, the siblings is a core priority, or it might be that mum and dad need some counselling supports. So really, it's for families who have children with a life-limiting condition and active palliative care needs. And I would say, you know, visit our website. It has a huge amount of information for people who are looking for more info on what's appropriate.
All right, Ciara McLaverty, CEO of Laura Lynn, and Marie Lynch, Community Assistant Director of Nursing. Thank you both for joining us on Galway Talks. We're back after news. Good morning.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall Galway, located on the Monavay Road.